Hello and welcome. This is DC Comics News Weekly Podcast. It's episode number 171. I look at the numbers sometimes and I think to myself, am I reading that correctly? Is it 117? Is it 71? How long have we been doing this now? I mean, at some point, we're in the hundreds, right? Like, it's getting pretty wild. I'm joined by the amazing Mr. Steve J. Ray. How you doing today, sir?
Greetings. I am semi-well. Thank you, brother.
Yeah. Folks, we're going to play a little, can you tell the difference? And we'll see if you're right or not. But before we get to that, I'm also joined by the amazing Mr. Brad Filicki. Brad, how you doing today, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing good. Ready to talk some DC.
We have plenty of DC. I'm your host, Seth Singleton. I sort of dropped in on all this at the last minute. So thanks for the guys for letting me hop in, because schedules are adorable. And all I can say is a dead battery can change everything about what you think you're going to do and what you end up doing. Luckily, I have the amazing, amazing crew to hang out with as a wonderful, there's what you plan and there's what you get that's even better. So with that, I'm going to fire things off first with just a fact of life thing that is always going to be, a challenge to share. But I think the more that this happens, I'm grateful for the fact that we can look at a story like this and think about how much we got before we reach the point of this story. I'm talking about Steve Skeets, who is the longtime writer and Hawk and Dove co-creator, who has recently died at the age of 80. As I said, it's always hard to respond to a story like this. Brad, I'll start with you. What would you like to say?
Steve and I were talking last week about how we're losing these kind of legends that were there at the very beginning. And he was close to that. It's funny seeing what he worked on. It definitely reminds me of when I first got into comics. It seemed like that was some of the stuff he worked on, like Plastic Man, Spider-Ham. That was not only humorous, but it was also the weirder side of comics to me. So that was kind of like an intro. His work was kind of like an intro into a weirder world that comics could present that I still respect to this day. Maybe with my own childhood interpretations of it, but Plastic Man always seemed a little bit weird, and Spider-Ham seemed a little silly, but there was also a little more to it, kind of like Howard the Duck in a way. But his work was another one. He was very legendary, and the fact that he created Hawk and Dove, I hope he got to see Titans and see how they were represented in the live action way, and because I thought they were really presented cool in that in Titans. So I hope he did get to see that, because those characters turned out to be more important than I think he realized when they were created. So I hope he got to see that before he unfortunately passed. But yeah, we lost another legend. What about you, Steve?
Legend is right. I mean, putting aside his work for DC, this is one of those guys who did the whole shebang. And I remember the Thunder Agents when I grew up. That's from Tower Comics, and the Charlton characters. He worked for Tower, he worked for Charlton, he worked for Marvel, he worked for DC. This guy wrote across the board, and like co-creating Hawk and Dove with the legend that was Steve Ditko. I mean, some of the names he worked with, like you say, some of these Golden Age and Silver Age legends, and quite rightly deserving of the title, are leaving us at a greater pace now. And it's heartbreaking to see the legacy of work he's left behind is literally the biggest tribute we can give him. And I'm going to dig up my old black and white reprints of the Thunder Agents. I used to love those characters. And Ditko's art to me, everyone talks about Kirby. I think Ditko should be in the same sentence. Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, enough said. And to work with this level of talent, his Aquaman stuff from the 60s. Plop magazine, the amount of work he put together, it's a sad day. And Seth, I don't know if you can add anything to that. Were you familiar with Steve's work?
I was, actually. See, I sort of wandered backwards into it. My first introduction to Hawk and Dove was in their more modern iteration that we've seen reflected in the Titans in the 90s. And it started to deepen a bit when we enjoyed sort of the wonder that was Armageddon at the time, and Hawk took on a very,
oh, yeah,
you know, different turn. And I also got to just sort of invest in them a little bit more through that and discover them. And then I went back and I remember realizing at some point while reading Crisis on Infinite Earths that it had previously been a different Hawk and Dove combination, brothers. And then sort of walking back from that point, like, oh, so how does this all work? And I was also one of those kids who loved the DC Comics cards when they came out in the 90s. So that was also sort of a wonderful way for me to build my knowledge, because they would have the, you know, the generations of the heroes from Golden Era through. And I enjoyed just sort of, so from there, and then also I had a lovely comic shop that I was very grateful for, opened up right around the time I was like seventh grade. So it was perfect. Right as I was introduced to comics, these guys had popped up, and they had a couple of boxes where I could get old Flash issues and other comics. And I got a couple of old Hawk and Doves and started to just learn more from that. So for me, that was a lovely experience. And I'm grateful for everything that Skeets had in regards to, you know, co-creating those. I also think it's pretty fun when you can think about what you were saying, Steve, about the idea of how you can work with these great people and be part of that co-creation process, you know, be someone who is able to collaborate with someone who has made such a definitive mark through characters like Spider-Man. But then, as you pointed out, can also enjoy the levity. Like, I think there's something about once you know enough about something to sort of start poking fun, or even not knowing, just sort of like have a little bit of fun. And I enjoyed that with Spider-Ham. He had like the fourth wall break and that sense of just sort of like, hey, we're talking about something that all of us know we're talking about, but we're not going to say it's the thing that we're talking, you know, and just that it reminded me of sort of I'm going to go even further back. But it reminded me of sort of like a vaudeville slapstick, and I enjoyed the ability to like capture different tones. We were talking about the guy who's been in charge of so many of the DC projects and from Arrow to everything else, and how you constantly have to be aware of how like you're addressing a different audience with each one of those. And I think that's something that Skeets was able to demonstrate here. He could do some really serious stuff with Aquaman. He could do some really serious stuff with Hawk and Dove, but he could also take the playful turn. He knew how to lighten up and loosen up. And it wasn't like this was stuff that got passed over. Like, oh, it was funny, but no one really cared. No, this is stuff people remember. The memories you guys were both sharing. Thunder Agents, as you were talking about, Steve, these are things that they leave a mark, and they may not have the indelibility of some of the ones that we talk about so regularly, like Superman or Batman or something like this. But for those they made a mark on, those are characters that we always hope someone's going to dig up and bring back to life, like we recently got to enjoy with someone like, say, Peacemaker. With that, I know that we also have another sad news to share. And thank you both for those great insights. If you heard anything that you haven't explored yet that they mentioned, go find it. It's going to be worth your time. That's one of the great things about some of the history we get to share here with these creators, the context that people like Brad and Steve can offer. It gives you a chance to go back through, see these old issues and stories with a context of their insight. With that in mind also, we have the passing of Michael Reeves, Batman the Animated Series writer, Gargoyles writer, dead at 72. And again, I can remember both of those projects well. Steve, I'm going to start out with you. You probably have some strong memories about his influence on Batman the Animated Series. So I'd let you hear your thoughts.
Yeah, this one, while I'm a big fan of Steve Skeet's work, Michael Reeves left an indelible impression upon myself and on Adam, my cub, because we do the weekly Batman the Animated Series podcast, I Am the Knight, and Michael Reeves wrote so many incredible episodes, including the legendary Perchance to Dream. So, oh man, the 90s for me is Batman the Animated Series, Gargoyles, the X-Men Animated Series. That's what the 90s was. And Michael Reeves had a huge hand in two of those shows. he wrote live action TV too. I mean, incredibly talented writer, incredible talent. And for what I could tell, a hugely loved and respected man in the field as well. One of these people that no one had anything bad to say about. I'm a fan, and I'm really feeling this passing quite deeply because of my love for Batman the Animated Series and for Gargoyles. So I can only imagine what his co-workers, his family and friends are feeling, because this is a guy who made an impression on me and has made an impression on the next generation of fans through Adam, through my offspring. So, man, I'm glad we're getting these hard stories at the beginning. But not to say that we're going to forget these incredible talents, because we never will. And but see, with Michael Reeves, I've got my Blu-ray box set right there. I watch these episodes weekly. I talk about them, and I've got a few more of his shows to watch and enjoy. And now I'll see them through slightly different eyes. So, yeah, farewell to another great. What did you make of it, Brad?
You know, Steve, you said a lot. And even though with these shows, with Gargoyles and Batman Animated Series, I didn't watch them when they came out, but I always felt their impact, even if I didn't. And I know that a lot of people, the generation ahead of us, that came right after us, I mean, was so influenced by these shows. This was the entrance into the world for this culture for so many people. So many, and people in the industry now, writers and comics and TV, you ask them, well, what got you into this? And so many of them say, like you were saying, the X-Men cartoon or Batman the Animated Series or Gargoyles. And it's, even when I wasn't watching it, it's something that I always had respect for. And I have since rediscovered a lot of it. And you can't overstate the importance of these shows they had on people's lives. They really had an impact. And not only that, but he wrote some of the more impactful episodes of some of those shows. And that's really something important to take away from this too, is that this is another, we lost another legend. And I, like you said, Steve, I think people are going to be talking about him and remembering him fondly in the fandom community, you know, forever, because there's always going to be people that are discovering these shows, and that's just not going to go away. So I mean, this is another horrible loss.
Yeah, I watched both of those shows. I remember being on a trip with my friend. His family was going to Disneyland, and he could bring a friend, and I got to go. And hey, someone's got a buddy joining us, folks. We've got a guest star. We'll get back to that in just a minute. Guest host.
It's Batcat.
It's Batcat. We're ready. And I remember the moment that we're in this hotel waiting to go in, and we see the trailer for Batman the Animated Series. And from that moment on, I remember my friend was just a changed person. Like, he already loved Batman, as did I. But it was pretty remarkable. And then later for me, I remember Gargoyles made such an impression, especially with the episode that they mentioned in the story regarding the gun violence issue. And it was really powerful. And I remember really being moved. I grew up in a very religious environment, church going. And I remember there was actually a debate between two of the youth leaders, because one of them was like, it's gargoyles, it's demonic. And the other guy was like, they help people, they're good people, they can't help who they became. And I love that discussion, because it's something to me that I've always appreciated about fiction, about fantasy, about comics, is I feel that there's an ability in animation and comics to tell stories with characters who give us an opportunity to step outside of what we think we know about the world and view a scenario just through a slightly different lens. And because of that, experience things fresh, anew, and maybe with a stronger meaning than we might have if they were, you know, presented in our real world contextually like that. So I love the power of someone who can do that. I think the one thing I'm heartened by is the fact that we're all talking about the people we know who've been influenced by this, as we have. And Brad, you brought it up. How many creators are out there right now who were influenced by that? Well, my hope is that, much like any of us, like I pointed this out when I've been asked the question, and I got to write a Greedy Greg story. And the whole time I was writing it, I thought of one thing only: Charlie Brown Christmas Special. If I can come close to the feeling of the Charlie Brown Christmas Special, then I've come close. And it's called Uncle Greg, and a nephew shows up, and he's the good kid, and he teaches the greedy uncle to be a little bit better around Christmas. And as long as I could try and get that message across, I was channeling my connection to. So my hope is that for everyone who's out there now working in entertainment, in animation, creating these stories, that they remember what Batman the Animated Series, what Perchance to Dream, what the story about gun violence was, because then they're going to turn around. They're going to say, how can I do something that gives that same effect to a younger audience, to a modern audience that carries on the tradition? So I'm always encouraged by stuff like that. And with that, I'm going to, again, as I like to do, raise the banner of hope with the friends here with us as well, and move on with positive news, because you know what the great thing about remembering a great passing is? Always with death, there's rebirth, and with rebirth, there's renew, and with renew, we can always think about, well, what's new coming around the corner, especially when it comes to news and the wonderful news that we have. We've got some set photos coming up from The Joker 2. With this one, Steve, I'm going to pick you up again because, Brad, there's stories that are flicky fashions, teaser, that I will be coming to you first on. But for the Batman stories, I mean, it's just easier for me to, on some occasions, immediately go, okay, Steve, I want to know, and I'm not going to wait. So tell me about your response to these set photos. What has the buildup been like? I've missed some of the conversations you guys have had with some of the information we've had leaking out regarding the film. So is this adding fuel to the fire for you? Is it building on things we've already uncovered?
Absolutely.
Tell me some stories.
Brad and I had a great chat last week on the flicky fashion side of things about Harley Quinn's costume for the movie, which we both adore and can't understand why certain fans are so up in arms about it. But this latest photo, like a front page of Gotham Globe or Gotham Gazette, which reveals finally Harley's middle name, Harleen Frances Quinzel. But I don't know if it's my pain meds talking or what, but immediately I saw Frances and I thought, have they named her after Frank? From the Harley Quinn series. Because we know that.
Did they do that?
We know that they named Barbara Gale Gordon after Gail Simone, the comics writer. So I don't know. But hey, you know, little touches, fleshing out the character, telling us something new. Whenever we get an adaptation, we know you get a movie that's come from a comic book, there's always new and exciting things to see. And we've all said it. The first Joker movie was a classic. So bring on the new stuff. Bring on the set photos. Fans with cell phones, I adore you. This is the kind of free publicity that Todd Phillips is amazing at. It happened with the first Joker movie. Rather than wipe it and take it off the internet, let it stay on there as long as it doesn't spoil the story, because it just adds fuel to the fire and gets us excited. What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, absolutely. It's totally getting me excited. I hope that we have stories like this every week. I think we've had one now for 3 weeks now. So I look forward to reading the news list and seeing if there's more pictures from Joker coming out. And I'll reiterate what I said, is that I'm glad that they're not stopping these from going out. I'm glad they're letting them get released so people can see them and start talking. It's funny that they said, that they mentioned in this article that it might confirm a rumor that she's not a therapist, she was just a patient in Arkham Asylum. But just showing this newspaper headline wouldn't necessarily say that at all. So that made no sense to me. She could have still been a therapist and now she's an inmate. So that didn't make much sense to me, but it does. It makes me more curious about the story. I love the little trickles of information we're getting, play guesswork. It's kind of what makes being a comic fan fun to me when it comes to this stuff. So yeah, I'm more and more excited. What about you, Seth?
I like how you mentioned that it's part of the fun, because that's going to come up later, of course. and we'll get to the fun about, right, like you said, how do we unlock these puzzles? What's the point? Clearly, they've really recognized the fact that more hush-hush you are about things, the more interest you're going to build, but also the more you allow certain theories to sort of become rampant, almost a forest fire at some point. However, you release trickles. You can sort of guide the speculation just a little bit. Now, here's the part that I have to laugh at. You guys are talking about the part where people are like, well, this means that she wasn't ever really a therapist. People are saying that. And you got to chuckle for a minute and go, why would you remove such a classic paradigm as the doctor falling for the patient, same as these stories we hear about a jailer, prison guard, you know, falling for an inmate, vice versa. I mean, these things happen. And it's actually the how it happens and how real it really is that brings people in. So I'm going to err on the side of these people are smart. They did Joker 1, brilliant. They know what they're doing. they're gonna take advantage of all the opportunities. And I sort of chuckle when somebody says something like that, because I think to myself, like, do you have such a low opinion, or do you just not want? Like, is it something that you're trying to will into being? So I'm gonna have some fun when we discover more details along the way. I do love the fact that, as you pointed out, Steve, we know about Francis. Is it Frank? We'll find out at some point. Maybe someone will give us a teaser on that.
They just planted that name there. I'm sorry.
Who knows what speculation you stirred? And like that, Steve, out there among the tinder, flicks a match and wildfire. Here we go. With that, though, I do also get a kick out of the fact that they're really making a point of sharing these bits of information, of letting people sort of get more excited, Brad, as you pointed out. Every little release, each week, they know they're feeding the fire, you know. They're having a bit of fun with it, and I think for that we get to enjoy, too, the fact that it also means that other projects are possible, at least suggested, definitely being pitched. As we have in our next story, it's Mike Flanagan. He has reportedly pitched a Clayface movie to DC Studios. Right now, there's two decision makers in that process. And what'd you guys think? Actually, Brad, I'm going to go to this one on you first, because for me, I feel like Clayface walks into that. How do you present such an interesting character? And I feel like Filicky Fashions can pick that up for me, because visually, that's the one thing we've yet to see. We've seen gorgeous versions in animation, but a live-action Clayface, stylistically, one, and then two, realistically. What do you think about this pitch? Can James Gunn make it a reality in his universe?
I think he definitely could. And I would say that it would be interesting if they could do it in a way. Okay, so I think we can safely say that Clayface is going to be CGI. If it would ever happen. So, but it would be cool if they could give us a Clayface that really pushes technology forward. You can say, well, I've never seen CGI quite like that. That's the Clayface that I would love to see in a live action movie. Are we ever going to see it? Not in this form. As much as, look, Mike Flanagan is one of the leading voices in horror fiction now from his films and Netflix shows. It doesn't get better than him as far as horror is concerned right now. So that, we know we would get a good movie, but would Warner Brothers happen? Would it fit in with James Gunn's vision? Given what's happened in the past years, I'm going to say never going to happen. I would be there with bells on opening day, 9:30 in the morning, first showing of the day, but I'm just going to say that I don't think it's ever going to happen. I would love to be proven wrong, and we'll see. What about you, Steve?
I have to pick up on something you said, because, again, the hive mind is in full effect. Mike Flanagan, horror. And that's the way they would need to present it, because otherwise it could come off cheesy and cartoony, and which is something we really don't want. What I'm hoping is that if they do bring this character in, it's in a horror, dark, noir fashion. So I see this character working more, believe it or not, in a Matt Reeves type Batman scenario, and having perhaps, rather than going with the original Clayface of Matt Hagen, going with the Basil Carlo, who was the golden age Clayface, who didn't have any powers until the 80s and 90s when he mixed the blood of all the other Clayfaces and mutated into the ultimate Clayface. If we go down that actor route, which the animated series blended the Matt Hagen and Basil Carlo stories to make their own Clayface, if they go down that route, a failed actor, someone who wants to be a master of disguise, it could go so many ways, but producing it realistically in a way that isn't cartoony and cheesy is the real trick. But these days, I mean, watching shows like The Last of Us, where you don't know what's a special effect on what isn't, and then watching the making of shows afterwards, there's very little they can't do if done properly. If they can bring in the big houses like Weta to do these effects, and with the lighting, if they keep it as dark as possible, and if they have an actual actor for the close-ups in really good prosthetics, and then the CGI for the morphing and the transforming and for everything else, if they manage to blend the real practical effects with good CGI, then it could work. But it has to be in that horror milieu, I think. It's the only way it'll work. But hey, like you said, will it ever happen? Let's keep our fingers crossed. What do you make of it, Seth?
I think it's a big investment. That's actually the first thing that I thought of, because what I initially thought about was how successful and how quickly terminated the Swamp Thing series that was loved and adored by those who got to see it, and was probably one of the best examples of how you can use the technology that we have to bring to life a character who, even in comics, can sometimes be difficult to portray in a way that feels familiar to longtime fans. I thought the show did it successfully, but I know the investment was huge. I also was thinking about the fact, as you mentioned, the horror motif. It was something that's mentioned in the story, and it was like a tragic horror motif. But also, I wondered about the idea of if it would be something that would work if he could pitch it as a character that they could use with the Creature Commandos animated one that they're doing, because then you could have a tie-in where you can maybe introduce the character there, or have it move between the two universes. And if there's enough popularity, then you can continue to make the argument that this live action version would be worth it. I think it would be a really interesting choice. I like the version of character that you suggested, Steve. I think that's a really fun one, because you can deal with not only the ability of the character, but also what sort of conflict there can lie in when you're mixing the blood of these different personalities with these abilities, and what sort of personalities come out of a clay creature made like that. What version do you take of that? So I think it would be a really great story. I think it would be a really great horror story. I think it would cost a lot of money. And I think Warner Brothers and Peter Gunn are going to be really hesitant about making that initial kind of investment. Maybe down the road they can see it if they can build to it in the right way, but it would have to be a long-term idea, because right now their biggest goal is to not shoot themselves in the foot after making this big announcement about a restart. So I feel like it's a project that could work, but it would need time, and they'd have to really plan for it. How much patience the director has, you know, things like that. That's always going to be a big challenge. Brad, I feel like you want to add something in.
I just want to say four words: Mike Flanagan, Swamp Thing.
Ooh, nice.
And maybe Clayface could be a villain in that. I mean, of course, you would have, you know,
very
a lot
evenly
of
matched.
Good,
yeah.
You know, Swamp Thing lore as far as villains go. But, you know, I think he would do a great job on the Swamp Thing movie.
I completely agree with that, too. I think one challenge with them being villains, and it's the challenge that I think I saw in the Transformers movies, and all I can remember is Roger Ebert, who at one point was like, I'm sorry, but sometimes the fight scenes just seems like they're vomiting metal across the screen, and we're supposed to know that it's important. And that would be a challenge with Swamp Thing and Clayface, who have two kinds of powers that are very easy to intermix. I'm also reminded of, I think it was Mad Magazine once had like Mr. Fantastic and Elongated Man fight, and they got all tangled up in knots, and you just have to point out, like, okay, some of these things are really important to portray well, and if not done well, these are the things that are going to be raised. You know, they're going to be sort of the issues that are going to come up. But I'm intrigued. In fact, DC, we know you're listening, you lurkers. And with that, steal Brad's ideas if you want to try. We've documented them here. It's recorded. He said it
they're
first.
Good ideas. So
give the man his cut. I agree. Just give the man his percentage and we'll all be happy. With that in mind, we're also, you know, having a bit of fun with the fact that everybody's got these great ideas about what they think James Gunn is doing. And so far, I think he's done a masterful job in every project before taking over at DC of misdirection. And he's been very successful. I love the fact that there's someone saying, hey, are you casting? What's going on? To which his response was, I believe, no, not a word. Not absolutely none. Steve, what'd you think about this story? I mean, at some point, are people going to get tired of, you know, doing this?
No, because not all fans are as wise or as into the lore as we are. I mean, if they'd cast the Superman, do you not think we would have heard about it by now? Come on, people. Seriously, Superman, the first, the one that started it all. If they'd cast Superman, the news would be out there. It would have leaked. Even if James Gunn hadn't said a word, it would have leaked that he would have had to come out and say it. The fact he's shooting down idiots, for want of a better word, left, right and center, is something that's bringing me a lot of joy, because honestly, some of these people, I think, how are you capable of standing upright, let alone commenting on the internet with the things you're coming out with? Seriously, if these people's IQs got any lower, they'd be watering, they'd be Frank the Plant. I mean, what is going on? James Gunn, you crease me up. You and Tom Taylor, the way you shoot down some of these fans just makes me happy. So it's Superman, people. If we'd know immediately had they cast this character, of course. I mean, Brad, please, am I wrong?
No. You know, tell us how you really feel, Steve. You know, but I agree, these idiots. Look,
I know I'm on the fence, I'm sorry.
Not only that, but one of the things about Superman is that it's generally unknowns that get cast, and they become known after they play Superman. That's probably going to happen with this. So why are you expecting there to be a short list of possible actors when generally it's probably going to be somebody that you don't really know that well? So just let the man do his work. He's got a lot on his plate right now. He's got to write and direct. God knows what else he has to do. Stop with these rumors. I swear half of his time he's spending getting out in front of these rumors.
It feels somebody that just needs to,
and I'll, hey, James Gunn, if you're listening, I'll happy to do this job. Scour the internet for these rumors about what's going on with these movies. But yeah, generally just cool your jets, because you're probably not going to know the actors, who the actor is anyway. It's probably going to be an unknown. What about you, Seth?
Yeah, like I said, right before we started this, yeah, the guy's been doing it so well. Right. When I introduced his story, I said, so far, he's been a master at misdirection. Every time people have been like, what are you doing with this and this? And he's like, oh, wait till you see. I remember Brad and I were trying to unlock the secret behind the sort of awkward romance scene. Remember, there was an awkward love scene you and I were talking about that was in Suicide Squad. And I'm trying to pick it apart. And I was thinking it'd be funny if they had a Pete Davidson one where he's like being really awkward and doesn't want to engage, but someone's lusting after him or something weird. Or, you know what I mean? Like, and I was completely wrong. I'm happy that I was wrong. The Harley Quinn scene that we had was masterful. It was, again, I used that word, I think, two or three times now. And that's how well he's done. So I feel with the misdirection, I'm not worried. And I also agree. This is going to be the story that as soon as they've made the casting decision, they're going to want to turn around and announce it. Same way they did when they cast Supergirl and they told us about it for the Flash movie. It was like, there's no hesitation. You want everybody to know, especially if this is part of your big star, especially when you're talking about things like All-Star Superman. You're going to spread the word. You're going to want everybody to know, because like we were talking about with the Joker too, it's these little teases of information that get people excited. Much like our next story, this little teaser that's come out about a possibility that James Gunn is saying maybe the Terrifics, maybe. Now, I don't know where you are, Matt, but I know this is something you're interested in. So if you haven't been watching or listening, Matt at DC Comics News, listen, because right now we're talking Terrifics and we want to hear from you. So with that, Brad, what did you think about this story, my friend?
I think these are the perfect level of characters that James Gunn loves to work with that are not as well known, but they become almost household names. So the Terrifics is a perfect, the perfect vehicle for him. And he could do it animated. He could do it live action. I could see them being part of Creature Commandos in some way. And then they could do like what they've done with Star Wars, bring them into the live action later. There's a lot that you could do with this. And I certainly don't think that it was an accident that he posted a picture with them. So boom, right in the middle. No, so I think so. Obviously not. And I think that there's something brewing with these characters. Maybe they could be somehow a way to connect everything somehow. Who knows? But I think that we're going to see from the Terrifics down the road and probably won't have to wait as long as we think. What about you, Steve?
This is the kind of news that puts a huge smile on my face. Why? Because however hit and miss that New Age of Heroes was with DC doing their homage stroke tongue-in-cheek giggle at the Marvel characters, the Terrifics from start to finish was terrific. It's just what it said on the tin. It was brilliant. In an age where there were no Fantastic Four comics coming out, which broke my heart because I love the Fantastic Four, to have DC doing their own take on the Fantastic Four, the family dynamic, the squabbling, the arguments, Plastic Man, who I adore, head to head with Mr. Terrific, one of the smartest guys on earth. That whole series was magic. I don't care how they do this. I don't care if it's animated. I don't care if it's live action. I don't care if eventually it's both. This is a project I would give my pinky finger for. If this is something they're hinting at that's going to happen, then just color me happy because I am overjoyed. I cannot wait. And oh boy, Plastic Man. That's all I have to say. Plastic Man. Oh, Seth, what do you think, mate?
Well, I think Brad started us off on the right track with the really simple fact that this is exactly the kind of material that James Gunn loves. It's what he thrives. It's a DC version of Guardians of the Galaxy in many ways. You know, he has an opportunity to take a great ensemble cast where you've got, you know, the serious and the smart and the silly. He's done wonderful with it. And that with Suicide Squad, I feel like this is a perfect property for him to use. Not only that, but as you guys were pointing out, the cast of characters that we have. Plastic Man, I feel, is a character that we really kind of need right now after things fell apart for The Flash with Ralph Dibny. That was tragic. We had a good thing going there. And without it, the Elongated Man's going to have to be retired as far as media like television and film for a while until there's enough distance that you can reintroduce the character in a way. So Plastic Man would be a great transition. Mr. Terrific, I think, would give you an opportunity to have some great statements about how we could be doing things. And you've got one of the third smartest person in the world playing a role in that. I also think that, as you guys pointed out, the quibble, the family dynamics, the teamwork involved, and also the fact that I think this is a property that a lot of people felt needed more attention, and if it had had more attention, it would still be an ongoing title, and I think this would be a great way to do so. I also think it would be a great test for what some of the potential is for some of these characters, maybe working with others, or maybe introducing some other part of the universe through this process. So I'm excited for it. I mean, I'm keeping in mind the fact that for me, currently, The Flash works with Mr. Terrific, so I want there to be maybe this to be an inroad for some sort of connection that can tie whatever's going on with The Flash movie to the Terrifics and keep that thread going, because I love the idea of the fastest man alive working with the third smartest man in the world and playing with all sorts of fun toys, and that for me is just fodder, right? Like, why not have that? It's great stuff to take use of, and with that, I'm going to jump to our last movie story, which was Ben Affleck revealing that there's a details of a Wonder Woman now cut cameo in the Flash movie. Say that six times fast. Okay. So, eeny, meeny, my Steve, what do you think?
Are you kidding me? they cut that. This is why I like physical media. DVD, Blu-ray, special features. They need to put that back in. Damn it. But hey, it sounds like, obviously, we're still getting Ben Affleck. I'm sad we're not getting Gal Gadot. But hey, we had a totally unexpected cameo from Wonder Woman in Shazam Fury of the Gods. So I'll take any Wonder Woman I can get right now. So it's just heartbreaking that these scenes get cut. But obviously, sometimes it does help the story. But as long as we get to see it in some form, even with shoddy green screen and nonsense visuals, the fact that Wonder Woman saves Batman. And what I love about the article is Ben Affleck saying that because of this scene, I now get it. I now know how to play Batman. This has changed the way I view the character and play the character. Would that mean that maybe he'll change his mind and he'll come back again? I don't know. But whatever the case, cut. But the fact they did it anyway means that, please, special features, let us see you. What about you, Brad?
Hive mind. You pretty much hit on everything that I was going to say. The whole, you know, special features, that would be worth it to buy the Blu-ray if they had that in. And it's just heartbreaking because, like, you know, I mentioned before, there is no better actress to play Wonder Woman. Like, she was born to play Wonder Woman. And the fact that we're losing her just breaks my heart, because it seems like this seems to be more cementing that fact that there might not be repairing that bridge at this point, which is just a shame. So that really bums me out, but I do hope we get to see it. And the other thing is, I was really surprised to hear Ben Affleck come around and do a 180 on Batman thing, on playing Batman, because he seemed to be really done with it. You know, it didn't seem to be a great experience for him. But the fact that he's kind of come around makes me curious. Maybe he could come back in cameos down the line. We definitely won't see him as the James Gunn DCU Batman, but it would be fun to see if he would come back in other ways. You know, like I said, cameos, things like that. So that's interesting. And I, in some alternate universe, I would love to visit to see a Ben Affleck directed Batman movie that we didn't get. But it is what it is. But yeah, what about you, Seth?
I think the toughest part was seeing the subtitle where it's the pull quote that says this was his best work, you know, as Batman. That Steve, as you were saying, he now has a better, if not the clearest, understanding of the character. Would that be enough to bring him back? I think so much time. I mean, you know, where it's 2023, it's been 6 years since he was on Justice League, you know, in 2017. Older you get, harder it is for the body to come back around, you know, and to have the will.
Don't I know it.
Also, what's that? Steve has been following my instructional how-to videos about knees, of which I said, don't buy those. Some guy just takes video of me blowing out my knees and sells them. Don't do that. With that in mind, we can both relate to what happens to the body, the damage, the toll that can be taken. I mean, you know, listen to Brendan Fraser talk about all the damage he did from George of the Jungle and stuff like that. And that was comedic action. I would love for him to maybe have some sort of future appearance. But also, and I'm just going to say this because I'm rooting for the guy after he really sort of came off the wagon again. I'd rather him just keep his sobriety and have a happy marriage at this point in his life. I mean, I'd love for him to come back as Batman, but if we have to balance the two and he has to deal with any of that darkness he dealt with, you know, once we had the changeover as far as directing, I'd rather that, you know, he leaves us with this last great what could have been. And it'll be on the Blu-ray physical, as you pointed out. I'm grateful for that, too. I'm also going to just take advantage of the fact that we did get to see some amazing Batman work in Snyder Cut to this day. I'll be grateful for. And I'm always going to be happy for the stuff that he did well. So with that, as you pointed out, too, with the Wonder Woman stuff, it's hard. I know. I think, you know, Damian was really clear a while back how there will be this severance. There will be this break between the old and the new. And if you're going to have a new Superman, it's hard to have a Wonder Woman who has a previous association with the previous Superman and keep a continuity. this is probably one of the last appearances we ever would have had of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. If we get any more in the future, it might just be luck or some other factor coming into play. Grateful for what we have. With that, I'm also keeping in mind that we still have TV and streaming, so I'd like to keep us moving on that because, my goodness, in something that I've sort of been sleeping on, but looks amazing, My Adventures with Superman will be premiering this year. We've got a really fun opportunity to watch the group grow and build not only Clark's secret identity, their relationship, but also teamwork with Jimmy Olsen, who I love the way he gets in trouble, man. He does it better than anybody else. But I also love the versions of these characters, of that character as these characters, as we've seen as a team in different versions. So having a lot of fun with that. Brad, I'm going to start off with you. What did you think about the details in this story and the fact that we've got this great animated version of Superman coming our way?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad it didn't get completely canceled. I find it intriguing that the whole concept of the show, of Jimmy Olsen's relationship with Clark and Lois as they get started and they're trying to figure out, solve crimes, and that's not necessarily a premise that you would think has to go to Adult Swim, but it's going to be on Adult Swim, so it's going to be a little more sophisticated. So how are they going to do it? Is it just going to be just adult themes, or are they going to have language? Like, how is that going to work? I think that's the thing that I'm most curious about, is how does it fit into the Adult Swim world? But I'm looking forward to it. So I think this is one that I'll definitely be watching as it comes out. What about you, Steve?
Again, Hive Mind, 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 Mind. Adult Swim. That's the bit that got me from the article as well. I think, whoa. Because if you look at the designs, it's very cartoony. It's much more child-friendly looking character designs than you'd expect. But then I remember that other great show that some of us may have heard of, Harley Quinn, the animated series, and I'm thinking, are they going to go down that route with Superman, Jimmy, and Lois? Because if they are, sign me the hell up, because I want to see that. I want to see a grown-up Superman animation with all the trouble that could bring with it. I mean, just the guy with superpowers and silly things like him getting angry and wrecking every table he stamped his fist on. I mean, I'm looking forward to anything like that. And I've forgotten this show was even a thing. Like you said, Brad, with the rash of cancellations we've had and projects being thrown out of the window, the fact that this is actually happening, we're going to see it this year, brilliant. Bring it on. And Adult Swim, Superman, intriguing. Mr. Singleton, what did you make of it? Oh, Super Seth.
I do think that the Adult Swim choice is a very important thing to keep an eye on. I think it's something that's really going to show us a lot. I think that, as you pointed out, the examples that we've seen with things like Harley Quinn, how there can be a greater allowance, more room to play when the characters feel a little bit more cartoonish, when it feels a little bit more like, well, of course this isn't quite reality, and of course we can go in a slightly different direction because we're not taking ourselves that seriously. It reminds me of Teen Titans Go. You know, they have some really great ideas, but at the same time, they're not doing anything more than saying, we're here to make you laugh, we're here to be as silly as possible. 95% of what we're doing isn't going to make sense. This is going to be a little more serious than that, but still, I think it's going to have some great moments that we're going to be talking about in the future. I feel like it understands how successful Harley Quinn was, and it knows that it can do something esque, Harley Quinn-esque, Harley Quinn-like in the footsteps of, and yet still retain all of those things that we, you know, kind of want from Superman and Lois. Like, are we going to get some sort of like naughty shadow sex scene? I really am hopeful that we won't. I kind of don't need to see Clark and Lois in that way, but will we have maybe some double entendres, maybe some jokes about, wow, you got here fast, you do everything that way, stuff like that, where you're like, oh, okay, you know, everything is. But one of the things that I loved, and Dean Cain soured this for me a little bit, but when we had a live action Superman that was kind of playful, who was because he was heating up the keyboard too fast and had to blow and cool it off, or would do sort of fun things that made you think about powers in a very interesting, fun, playful way. I feel this show can take advantage of a lot of those opportunities, can also do so with the lack of restrictions that animation has. We've talked about this. You know, some of the things that we've loved, some of the best projects have been animation because they're not restricted by live action, CGI costs, things like that. So with all of that, I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be really, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think actually it's going to be something that we're going to be talking about for a while. and I can already imagine just how silly and dark they can get with it, given the adult nature and the adult platform. But I also wonder, like, where are we going to see him? Like, nope. We go this far. We go here. We don't go blue. Okay. We go here and we don't go. We'll see how they play it out. I'm also excited about the fact that, we're talking about some great news regarding the Titans coming up and the fact that the Teen Titans are coming back for their final episodes, for their final season. Again, another chapter closing. But in that process, we do get Jason Todd back, potentially healed, potentially in a training role. We get Tim in costume. Excited for that. I'm hoping that he doesn't get shot or something else. And I'm sure Nightwing's probably worried about that, too. And you know, we also have that thing going on with that guy, the half-brother of Raven, brother O'Blood. Yes, potential danger there and mayhem. So with all of that, Brad, for this one, I'm turning to you simply because for me, Titans is as much about the story and the characters as it is about the fashion. So with that in mind, we get to see Tim in a Robin outfit. I think he looks pretty smooth. We also get Jason Todd back. Walk me through all the steps, man. Give me your impressions.
I think Titans has knocked it out of the park as far as costumes go. I think that's definitely one of the things that the show got right. And as far as I just like to see Jason Todd being redeemed. I like characters who have a redemption arc, and this seems to be a pretty powerful one. So I'm looking forward to seeing this all play out in the last episodes. Jason Todd's a character that is not always shown in the best light. I mean, going way back to the 80s, he was voted, readers of the comics voted him to die. So he's kind of had it. He was up against the wall already from the beginning. So I just like the idea that character has a redemption arc in the show. And as Steve and I were talking about a few weeks ago, Tim Drake is kind of the overlooked Robin. So I kind of like that we're getting to see more of him in Titans. And it kind of makes me bummed that these are the last episodes. I would have liked to have seen that relationship develop more in a possible fifth season had we gotten it. But I'll take what I can get. And I'll definitely be watching these last episodes. What about you, Steve?
Titans is my jam. I love the show, and like you said, in terms of visuals, it's terrific. And let's be fair here, we owe Titans a huge debt of honor because the whole Felicky fashion came from this show when Superboy just needed a nice pair of pants. I mean, we owe Titans for that alone. So praise be creators of Titans for giving us Felicky fashions. So yeah, the Tim Drake Robin costume, we talked about it last week. Awesome. A training montage with Tim and Jason. Hell yeah. I want some of that. It's just like you said before, it's sad that it's coming to an end, but at least, and I like this, it's not like Swamp Thing, which was cut short and cancelled before the final episode even aired. They know it's the final season. We're going to get an ending. It's going to end properly. I'll take my blessings. I'll take it with that. And I keep saying that four seasons is a lot easier to binge on a DVD box set than 10. So I'll take that as a plus, and I'll pick it up with my Doom Patrol box set too. What about you, Seth? What did you make of it?
I love the costume. I love that we get to see the redemption arc for Jason Todd. You know, the journeys they took him on in the comics has been a lot of fun. As you point out, though, even there, it still feels like sometimes he doesn't get the most love. I felt like in Three Jokers, he was still kind of the outcast, the undesirable, you know, the sort of why is he along? and it would be nice to see a fun redemption arc. I also like the ideas that the story, you know, taps into how can he play a significant role for Tim, who's in a place that Jason understands, trying to follow in the footsteps of a legacy, trying to live up to the example of someone like Dick, who's not the easiest guy, who's not exactly, you know, hey, it's going to be all be okay. Here, let me give you, you know, a hug. And let's, I mean, sometimes he's a hard nose. And having Jason to sort of balance that out, help him realize what he understands, and also show him a little bit about the realities with training, you know, that there's practicing and then there's, you know, what happens when somebody throws the first punch. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. The fashion that you guys pointed out, I think they've nailed the characters so well. I think they've done such a great job of making them feel real. And to this day, I still credit them for making Starfire's costume more palatable, something that I can defend to people, where sometimes with the comics version, I'm like, yeah, it's a warrior outfit. Get off. There's nothing I can... I didn't design the character. I like the character. I can't defend the outfit. But I think they've done a great job. I think they're setting us up for a great final season. If you're going to go and you know you can plan the way you want to go out, right? What a great way to plan your own, you know, ending to your story. I still to this day remember when we were talking with Scott Steiner that one time and how that was something that Morrison really impressed upon him. That whole idea of know the endings to your stories, you know, see that ending. And, they've seen it. They know how much of it they're going to be able to bring to us with what they've been able to develop to this point. I think we're lucky for it. I'm also intrigued with the fact that we pivot from that to our next story, which is the fact that the Gotham Knights series, which I'm going to be completely honest, I have not had a chance to check out. I've been behind on a lot of stuff, is going to be bringing the mutant leader in. Fans of Dark Knight Returns will remember this Frank Miller character. So with that, Steve, I'm going to go ahead and flip it over to you and get your thoughts on the introduction of this character. Have you been watching the show, and how do you feel about the involvement of the mutant gang, the mutant leader, as part of the current storyline?
We don't get this show in the UK as yet, so I haven't been able to see any, so sad. But everything I'm hearing, it's making me happy because it's shutting up the naysayers. The casting news, the characters we're getting, the actors we're getting in this show means that they are taking this stuff seriously. And to bring in a character like this, whew, I remember reading The Dark Knight Returns. I've got my original four issues, and it's one of those stories that changed the game, because here was, in a comic book sense, Batman fighting almost himself, but a dark, twisted himself, the strongest, the meanest, and he's an old guy at this point. But there's also the whole meta thing of the non-powered superhero against the thing that was all the rage at the time, the mutants, the X-Men, the comics that were selling the most, whereas Batman's comics were not selling until Frank Miller came in with stories like this in Batman Year One. So the whole thing of introducing this character to a TV show where, again, people were shooting it down before it even aired, I think it's clever. It's brilliant. I want to see who they cast. I want to see how they pull it off, because in the comic books, this guy was huge, mean, and nasty. And Batman won, hey, the way Batman always does. If you can't win a fair, cheat. And that's what I love about the character. That dark side, that anything at hand is a weapon, a win at all costs. So, brilliant. I think it's inspired. Really looking forward to see it. Hopefully we'll get the show in the UK soon. We've got the final season of Flash airing, which I'm really enjoying. So fingers crossed we'll get the show. Let's hope. What about you?
Yes, I have seen the show. And it was better than I was expecting it to be. Like you said, Steve, it seems like some of the naysayers are shutting up. It kind of shows the beauty of the Batman universe and why Batman is so popular. You have such a wide spectrum of characters and mythology that you can draw from. First season so far, three episodes in, we've already got the Court of Owls, which I'm so glad to see them in a live action context. And now we get the mutant leader. Now this he's still a big guy, but it seems to be a younger version of the mutant leader. Looks a little different, but still has a bit of flavor. from the Frank Miller version. So it makes me wonder what they have planned kind of down the road, if he's going to mutate more. But I think it was a cool idea to bring in that character, because not only is it a cool bit of fan service, but I think it's a character, and like I said, certain parts of mythology that they can use really cool. And I'm glad that the show is, it seems from, I mean, I could completely be off the mark here, but it seems to be doing well. You know, I haven't seen a lot of negative reaction on social media. In fact, I've seen some positive things about it. So, you know, like they say, we all do better when we all do better. So when DC projects do well, it's great. So I'm kind of happy to see that. And it seems like they really know what they're doing with the characters they choose to bring in. It's like they've done their homework. And I think something like this, I think that that's important. What about you, Seth?
I'm interested in the choice. That's why I was glad to get some insight from you, Brad, just about watching the show and about the development, how well they've done with things like the Court of Owls and now bringing in the mutant leader. Having, you know, only a little bit of feedback from, as you pointed out, critics and reviews, where sometimes I see the title and I'm like, yeah, I don't even want to bother with it. I might be able to glean some stuff, but I got to filter through too much that I know where I'll get the good information from. And I was glad I was able to get that today. With that in mind, I'm intrigued by how great it is that some of these characters, they might not have seemed as possible maybe 10 years ago. And now it seems like there's a greater opportunity to bring them in, to make them a part of a world that most people who don't read comics would not even sort of know what the reference is pertaining to. And those of us who've enjoyed them for so long now can understand just how potentially malevolent and dangerous. And Steve, love the example you mentioned with Dark Knight Returns to this day. One of my favorite lines, you know, this isn't a battleground. It's an operating table. I'm going to surgically take you down. I always love the old fighters, you know, when they think more strategically than they do about speed or power, because their whole thing is, look, all I got to do is get what I need once or twice, right? It's all it takes. Now, how can we see a cadre of young fighters, less proven, perhaps a little less knowledgeable, take on such a character? That's going to be an interesting test. I'm curious to hear how well they do. Brad, I'll be checking back with you folks. Brad Filicki, he tells you at the end of each episode where to find him. Between him and Steve, you're always going to be up to date. So, you know, I would just follow. With that, we have one more TV and streaming news. This one I'm trying to wrap my hands around, so I'm pulling my hands through my hair thinking that will help, and it never does. Warner Brothers and Discovery have announced an event for combining HBO Max, Discovery, and through that, then we get the church and the steeple. No. So we end up with, guys, who's pulling this apart and figuring out what they're doing? Because it sounds like right now there's going to be an announcement about something, and some things are going to change and some aren't. But if you're noticing a lack of details, there's a reason why. Steve, what'd you think about this, man?
I have no opinion. We don't get HBO Max or Discovery here, so.
That's why it's so much fun to start with you. Like, do you even care?
It's like Joey Tribbiani said, it's a cow's opinion. It's a moo point. Seriously, exciting? Or is it terrifying? I just don't know. The Discovery shows, I've seen, are all wildlife shows, so how that bears anything to do with Warner and the entertainment side of things, I don't know. So many mergers, so many things changing, so many this. What's going on? Hopefully one day, before my 90s arrive, we will get HBO Max in the UK so I can enjoy it and wonder what all this fuss is actually about. So I'm just going to say, yay, or oh, no. Brad, what do you make of this story?
I don't mind the idea of having Discovery Plus content. I think that there's some interesting original programming, and that's fine. And I think that they'll use this as an opportunity to maybe have some original programming as part of the Discovery brand. So you could have some kind of cool historical shows. But the thing that they're not saying, and they're probably saying for a reason, is they're not mentioning a price point. when they combine it, what's that going to mean? Because I don't want to have to spend $20 a month just to get HBO Max. You know what so that's, to me, that's the important part here, is what's the pricing going to be on this combined Discovery plus HBO Max situation? Are you able to opt out of the Discovery if you want? Is there an ad situation? So that, to me, that when that announcement comes, I think it's April 12th, that's going to be the make or break for me if I'm excited about this or not. What about you, Steph?
Yeah, I'm completely lost. I mean, I might as well be sitting in Steve's chair going, what? Because I'm still left with the fact that I keep hearing about DC shopping a lot of their library off to different platforms instead of keeping it on HBO Max, which makes me then worry, okay, so when we do get this HBO Max and Discovery combination, how much of the stuff that I care about will still be there? I want that library. That's why I went with HBO Max, because you shut down the DC Universe one, which is where the library was before that. Now there's stuff that used to be in there that isn't, stuff that I enjoyed that I can't because it, for whatever reason, is no longer available. So my main concern with the merger is, what am I losing? Because I feel like that's happening, but we're not talking about it. We're going to wait and maybe sort of like talk about all the things we're going to get. And then over here at the end of the article, by the way, the following will be dropped. That's what I'm looking for in the announcement. And also, as you guys mentioned, like, what am I getting from Discovery? I do think it's great that they have, you know, some great original programming. I can't think personally of a single show that I watch that I know of that's on Discovery. So for me, I'm sort of at a loss. Like, I don't know what I get out of it. And as you point out, Brad, am I getting this at the price that I'm getting it because I didn't really want or ask for this other thing that's being added, or am I getting it and I'm being asked to pay more to keep the thing that I actually want, which is the HBO Max? So we'll see how that shakes out. You know, I'm still waiting to find out, but I feel like this announcement leaves me with a lot more questions and a lot more uncertainty than maybe they intended to when they made it. Like, hey, isn't this great? And I'm thinking to myself, no, because what you've told me leaves me with less than I have before. So with all of that, I know something's happening, and I wish I knew how it was really going to affect me and what choices I'm going to make about it. So hopefully we have more.
Maybe we should pitch our own shows, like Enter the Bat Cave, where you literally enter a cave full of bats. I don't know.
Man, I thought I had something going for you there that was going to be like, I like it or I want to like it or something, but it just never picked up. So it's just like, So with that, we're going to shift gears out of TV and streaming, take an opportunity to talk about comic books. Well, because it's a lot easier to figure out than what we were just talking about with HBO Max and Discovery, at least for me. So maybe you're just doing this for me, in which I thank you and I'm grateful, and who knows? Who knows? With that, Brad, Flicky Fashions, my friend, I've got a story for you. We have a Superman in a different costume. A white costume? A new series? What?
It's okay. It's very spacesuity. It's okay. I don't love it. And I'm a little bit behind. I haven't read the new Superman books yet, I hate to admit, but it makes me... I'm guessing that there's a reason why he had to get a new suit. There's a reason why he has a helmet. I'm guessing that's why. So I give this like a 6 in the Flicky Fashion scale. That's a scale of 1 to 10. So I give it a 6. What about you, Steve?
It's not permanent. We know it's not permanent. So for a temporary change, yeah, it's cool. It's different. As a fan of the old Electric Superman, for me, whenever they do something like this, it's cool. But I like throwing in my 2 cents worth. Now, for example, like you said, spacesuit, red tint, lots of weird alien-looking creatures flying around him. He's going somewhere where there's a red sun. So that suit's going to store his solar energy and keep him powered up. I don't know. I have been reading the new Superman, really enjoying it. Great team. That's all I care about. And the look is still, I mean, he's still got his shield there. You know, it's Superman. You can see his face. Great. It's not going to be forever. Because like you say, Brad, I give it a 6 out of 10 as well. John Kent's costume's better. So Yeah, I'll read it because it's got a great writer behind it. It's got a great artist behind it. It's doing something new. Luthor's in prison, but he's still in Superman's head. Do pick up the new Superman series. It's really good reading. It's fun. It's a tribute to everything that's gone before. So new costume, temporary, yep, I'll roll with it. I'll enjoy it and rejoice when the classic red and blue returns. What about yourself, Seth?
Well, I had been in the process of sharing this story, tried to actually like get to the picture, but the image kept reloading. I had to click off. So to give everyone an idea, that's something akin to the outfit that we're referring to. And then as Steve pointed out, if you take a look, yes, there are these purplish creatures nearby. There's a possibility that we're talking about a red sun environment or some other reason why he needs a specific suit that's going to contain his powers or protect him from something else, whatever that might be. Now, the interesting thing I found is it had that weird sort of bubble thing around it that felt, yes, would it be a solar capturing device? Would it be an energy storing device? It also felt a little Buzz Lightyear-ish, which is probably the one thing that came to mind for me the most. And I loved Blue Superman. He was awesome. that takes me back. I love those stories. With that, I do agree also, it's not going to be a permanent. This is one of those he had to go somewhere and do something, and that's it. But I think it's sort of fun that this is one of those moments where everyone's like, what is it? What's it for? Why is he in that suit? Well, hey, are you hooked? Check out the book. As Steve just pointed out, we've got a great creative team, great stories to enjoy. This is just going to be part of it. So, you know, get caught up now. This way you can understand everything that's happening when it happens and maybe get back to us about just how good it was and how much fun a story like this can be. I think it's always sort of neat when they go on these adventures and you're like, what's with the outfit? Then you learn and you're like, All right. But as Brad pointed out, stylistically, 6, 7. I wanna be nice, but overall, I mean, come on, man, it's Superman. Couldn't there be some plasma, multi-dimensional? Anyways, I'm channeling Grant Morrison right now. Like, yeah, can't we have some tetrahedral thing that hails from the 18th galaxy? And yeah, with that, we do have. Another image that might take some figuring out, because Tom King, if you haven't heard, is a comic book writer who likes drawing his own covers. I don't know what they give him during these conventions, but sometimes he'll post this thing that he drew and you're just like, wow, it's either really brilliant or sad, but it's quite adorable. And as part of April Fool's, which is the day we're recording on, actually, Tom is going to be releasing and has released a series of very interesting covers. I will have images to share, but I do have a quick teaser as far as, well, if that's Batman and Robin in a bit of an homage to that first cover, it's, well, there it is. So with that, Steve, I'm going to start out with you, buddy, because we had a Batman cover and Tom King is sort of made a name for himself on Batman stories. What did you think about Tom King's April Fool's covers?
I don't collect all these issues, but I'm definitely buying all four of those covers. Tom King's been posting.
So it worked.
definitely. Absolutely. Because you're never going to see their like again. However much you hate your least favorite comic artist, they are 1,000 times better than this stuff. But these are so bad, they're brilliant. The one you just showed with Batman and Robin. Oh, my days. The fact he's apologizing to Bob Kane on that cover. He's actually written on there, sorry, Bob, is to me like the ultimate. I friggin' love these covers. I'm buying all of them. Yeah, it's a thing of beauty. It's an absolute thing of beauty. I don't collect all these titles. I collect some of them, but these four comics must be in my collection. Just don't tell the wife because I'm meant to be selling my comics, not buying more. But come on, this four comics. This is four comics. You know, it's got to be done. Brad, I know you've got something to say about these works of fine, gorgeous, stunning artwork.
I think it's genius. Like you said, I've kind of stepped away from buying the monthly comics, but these might take me back to pick them up. How would you not want these as part of your collection? And as you know, I'm a big trades guy, so I love the idea that they'll put all these alternate covers in the back of the trades, so we'll have these in the trades when they come out. I love that idea, and it's just such good fun. I mean, how could you not love this? Especially for all of us who can't draw to save their lives. I always say I wish I could draw, and I definitely cannot. But it's just a lot of fun. What about you, Seth?
It is a lot of fun. So this is my weakness. I decided that I could either turn to paying for all sorts of illicit things that I probably shouldn't get involved in anymore, or I would, you know, spend money on comics. So I've been reading Danger Street and a few others and collecting them. And actually, just for that, I'm going to put up the Danger Street one, which I think is just hilarious because there's a street called Danger, which is what I would have done if I was like 5 or 6 and drawn this. All right, let's be honest, 10. And then we've got the Creeper. And we've got...
It's a big long string with Danger written on it. That's just genius. Right.
It's just genius. Like, that's me. Like, that's me as a kid going, it's called Danger Street? Here's a street. What's not to love? So I think those parts are fun. I also have to agree with Steve. You will not ever see a comic cover like this again, unless it starts a whole thing and this becomes like, you know, some other addition to the blank ones. Like writers make their best attempt or worst attempt at drawing something on a cover. But I think it's going to be hard to match up with this. I feel like Tom King's captured an essence with it that reminds me of, well, did you ever do that thing where you take a paper plate and you like draw a picture on it and then they do a ceramic thing with it and they can fire it in a kiln and bring it back out? It's basically like a plastic kind of plate. I did one of those and the knees are like, you know, these like squiggly things and all sorts of stuff like this. And he has somehow tapped into that. I don't know if that's still the way he just draws and this is like he never stopped being 5 or what, but I don't know if anyone else can pull this off. I don't know. And Tom, if you never stop being 5, that's how you write such great stories. So with that, I'm okay with it. However, I might have to get these. I might. With that too, I also love the fact that for all the fun, there can also be some really uplifting stories that we get our hands on here. And one that I think is really uplifting and exciting to think about is a character that we've known and loved from the Harley Quinn show. It's now had a really great breakout with G. Willow Wilson in her own series. I'm talking about Poison Ivy and the recent GLAAD award that she received for Outstanding Comic Book. This is something that has gone to a lot of great books recently that have made some great statements from amazing creative teams. Since we're in the Batman world, Steve, I'm going to go ahead and flip it to you first. What did you think about this announcement? I know Poison Ivy is a character you're familiar with, and this sort of recognition must be a lot of fun.
Recognition for the character, recognition for G. Willow Wilson's stellar writing, and another feather in the cap for DC and inclusivity, because let's be fair here. Between the Pride Month specials, the fact that it's almost Pride year this year, the amount of stuff that's going out there, winning this award just shows how DC have got the finger on the pulse of the real world, of reality. Yes, they're making comic books about brightly colored superheroes punching the living daylights out of supervillains, but they've got this real focus on the fact that there are so many different kinds of people out there and they all need to be represented and have their voice in comics. The fact that Poison Ivy, this run, started as a 6-issue limited series, it was so stellar that by issue 4, they'd announced, oh, it's going to be a 12-issue miniseries. By the fact they time they reached issue 8, they said, no, forget it, this is going to be ongoing. And now this award on top, it just makes me proud and happy. And a wise man who likes a nice pair of pants once said, it's a great time to be a DC fan. Oh, wise man, how wise you are. What do you have to say about this fantastic, well-deserved award and this great, great comic?
I think one of the main appeals of superhero fiction is to be able to see yourself in characters. And it's that's why with comics specifically, representation is so important. And this book just nails it. And G. Willow Wilson, great writer. I've been a fan of hers ever since Air, that Vertigo series from the 2000s, which I think was very underrated. So I've been following her work. She always has very insightful things to say. And like you said, it's a great time to be a DC fan. DC is really nailing the Pride thing. They're making it feel natural and forced. Not forced, I mean. They're just representing what the world is really like and other people that are out there. And this series is... It keeps continuing to grow. Now it's an ongoing series. Now it has awards. This series could turn out to be pretty legendary and important to comics in general. What about you, Seth?
I agree. I think it's one of those that I'm wondering if this could be leading to something more. We've been lucky enough in the Batman universe to have a gorgeous Joker movie. We have an upcoming Penguin series. G. Willow Wilson has already proven that her material can be adapted to the streaming screen with things like Ms. Marvel over on the Disney Channel. And I feel that her understanding of the importance of these characters, and as you guys pointed out, the quality of stories she's been telling to expand this from a 6 to a 12 to an ongoing. And the fact that I think there's so much going on in the world right now that is right material that she, like great writers do, understand how to interpret and then bring into the comics. This could be something that can feed a lot of different avenues. And I'm hopeful for where it can lead to. I think this award is recognition of that. It's also a recognition of the need for this right now. There's a lot of animosity, and amongst that, you need characters that people can turn and they can say, thank you for a reminder that it's not easy, that it's hard, but these are the things that we do when it's hard, and these are the reminders that we need. I am a big softie, and all it takes is a really good episode of the current Superman series, of The Flash, of one of those characters that I know and love and that I've connected with that reminds me about the things that are important, that when the world looks like it's a hard place to go out into, that these characters can say to you, yeah, it's hard, but these are the reasons why we do it, and these are the things that make it worth it. And I think a recognition like this says this is a title that if you have someone that you want to share a character like that with, this is a great character for them to know about. And for those who already do, the fact that it's going to be an ongoing and they can continue to have the support through the stories that say to them, without question, you know, you are represented and also you are understood. And this is a place where you can continue to find support. I think it's a gift. I hope it continues to give. I think this award is a recognition of that. Grateful for it. Grateful for the fact that, as we're going into these final stories, it's hard not to feel really lifted up after we started things off with some really difficult news. And with that, I want to turn to the fact that Dawn of DC has a trailer that was recently revealed for MegaCon, and we've got stuff coming our way. Guys, how are you feeling about it? What's your sort of excitement level at? Brad, what were your thoughts, my friend?
What I like about this trailer is that it would be a great thing to show somebody who doesn't read comics. Like, hey, check this out. Look what's going on at DC. Here's a great time to jump in and kind of get in at the ground level on some of these characters. That's seems to be what this trailer is saying, and I really like that because I know that for new fans, a lot of them, what it's intimidating is the history and the continuity. And what stories do I pick up? Where do I start? There's just so much out there. And this is a trailer you can show them. This is it right now. This is going on in DC. Go into the shop and pick this stuff up. It's a great place to start. So that's what I liked about this trailer. And I think what I like about the Dawn of DC initiative as a whole. What about you, Steve?
Spot on. Couldn't agree more. You said everything I wanted to say. For a new reader, this is a ray of sunshine in a dark, gloomy world, I think. The fact that you can pick up brand new Green Arrow number one. The fact you can pick up a whole new run of Wonder Woman stories by a new creative team without having had to have read anything that came before it. The Flash, brand new start, brand new creative team. Three great characters. And the trailer itself is terrific. It's literally just comic book pages animated with the incredible voice of the honest trailer guy telling you what's coming now from DC. The dawn of DC is shining bright. That trailer alone has me captivated. I love it. So new fans, jump in. Old fans, see something new. Everybody wins. That's all I have to say. What do you make of it, Seth?
I like it when everybody wins. And I love the things that you guys were just describing. It's a great opportunity for new fans to come in to avoid that sort of pressure of what's come before and how much do I need to know before I dive in. And also, I think one of the ones you pointed out, Steve, is a great one with the Green Arrow, where we're going to have Black Canary looking for. We're going to have this great group of characters. And I always enjoy a story where you learn about the character through the characters around them, where they sort of tell you about this character and what they know about them and what you can learn before you get the chance to actually see them appear in the panels. And for all those great legacy characters, this is a jumping in point. This is a chance to start fresh and new, join these characters, and go on a great adventure. I mean, who knows? You might find yourself in something as interesting as the Poison Ivy series we were just talking about. All you have to do, pick up the book, turn a page, tell us what you think afterwards. For our final story of the comic book news. Is it our final story? I'm double checking. It is. I'm feeling better about that. We have a new Batman and Robin series that's been announced by DC. Guys, all I saw was Joshua Williamson, and I was like, it's going to be great. And that was kind of like it. Like, I know there's other details in there, but that was it for me. Now, that's me. Brad, what did you think, my friend?
You know, they've really given Joshua Williamson the keys to the kingdom when it comes to the DC universe and the comics he's writing. So it makes total sense that he's the go-to on this new book. He dealt with Batman vs. Robin, dealt with Shadow War, all that. So it makes sense. And people liked his run on Batman. So it makes total sense that he would be the go-to person to relaunch the series. Especially in the concept of a Dawn of DC where they're, you know, starting fresh. So yeah, you can't beat that creative team. He's going to go down as one of the legends as well, I think, of the current generation of comic writers. So yeah, to me, it just makes total sense. Almost like if they had chosen anybody else, why would they do that? What about you, Steve?
Exactly that. His track record speaks for itself. He's barely set a foot wrong since he started. I mean, his Flash run, fantastic. Like you said, Shadow War. The last Damian Wayne Robin series was Joshua Williamson. And following on from the absolutely fantastic, which I was kind of dreading because I thought, ugh, another Bat crossover, even though I'm the biggest Batman fan in the world. I know that some people are suffering Batman fatigue. I'm not one of them when the story is this good. We've seen Shadow War go into Batman versus Robin, go into the amazing Lazarus Planet. My God, that story's been phenomenal. I've loved it. And now Batman and Robin reunited, the dynamic duo, father and son. This book's got my name written all over it. And when you add this creative team on top of that, fantastic. This is the perfect news to end the show on for me. Give me more Batman as long as it's written by writers of this talent with great art, great stories, and a legacy that fans will love. Like you said, Dawn of DC, brand new number one. New fans can jump on this. Old fans like myself can just carry on enjoying the stories they've been enjoying for years and years and years. Outstanding. What did you make of it, Seth?
I think it's great news. I'm really happy for everything Joshua has brought. I mean, like you pointed out, his Flash run was amazing. Everything he's put his hands on since then has just been really well done. And I like the idea of the circle that he's creating here. You know, talking about the Shadow War, moving into Batman versus Robin, the Lazarus planet that you're describing, which is just, and then he just doesn't seem to stop. The man is a textbook definition of prolific. He does not stop. And I say, let him keep running. Brad, I think you're right. I think he is a legend already in this modern area of writers. And I hope he just keeps producing and he keeps having fun doing it, because as long as he's happy writing, we're going to have amazing stories. He's proven it. I agree also, Steve. What a great story to end on. Thank you for everyone who's joined us today. This has been DC Comics News, episode number 171. I've been your host, Seth Singleton. As I pointed out, I have been joined by two amazing people, and their wisdom never stops when the episode ends recording. You can find them on all sorts of platforms, all sorts of places, where all you have to do is let them know that you've got a question or you're looking for an insight. I know they're going to be there to share. With that, Steve, where can the good people find you out there in the big wide world?
Most weeks on this wonderful show with these wonderful people and these gorgeous faces. Also on I Am the Knight, the Batman animated series breakdown, with my cub and I talking about what's going on in the animated Batman universe. In writing on DC Comics News, Dark Knight News, and Fantastic Universe, is the easiest way to get to all three of those is just to type Steve, J, Ray, or Fantastic Universes into your search engine of choice. And talk to me on Twitter, please do, at lstevo, E-L underscore S. T-E-E-V-O. I will always reply, especially if you want to talk about nerdy, yummy goodness. What about yourself, Uncle Brad?
You can find me on DC Comics News, writing news and reviews. You can find me on this podcast, and you can find me on the Harley Quinn Medla podcast, part of the DC Comics News podcast network. I always bring that up every week because I want to subliminally implant ideas that let's get back to recording that soon. We got to jump back on that because I miss it. So hopefully that will be coming back.
I miss
back
listening
soon.
To it.
Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter at FlickyB1. And Seth, where can people find you?
Where can you find me? You know, the easiest thing, my name's right there, the bottom corner, Seth Singleton. Just type me into a search bar and put Linktree after, and you'll find me. There's a whole list of stuff I'm grateful to be a part of and lucky to be participating in. And if you want to see comic book reviews and articles that I was lucky enough to write for DC Comics News, you can also go there, type my name into the search bar. You'll find stuff that I was lucky enough to be a part of and enjoy and share with you. And you can find me as often as I can make it right here with the gang on DC Comics News Weekly Podcast. You can follow us on all of your social media platforms, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or anything else like that. Just use the at symbol and DC Comics News, capital D, capital C, capital C, O-M-I-C-S, capital N-E-W-S. You're pretty much there. And you can also make sure that you use DC Comics News to search your favorite podcast platform. Look for us on YouTube. And once you do, subscribe. Make sure you never miss out on the audio or video version of us, whichever you choose to prefer. And by doing so, you'll also make sure on the audio channel that you'll never miss out on future episodes of things like I Am the Knight and other great programming that we bring to you as often as possible. We will be coming back weekly with all the great stories we can share. We're hopeful you can join us. And in the meantime, there's just one thing we always like to remind you of between episodes, and that is to always
read
more.
Comics.
I don't know who is supposed to do what there, so it was just kind of fun.
Our powers are strong.
We are. Beware. Thanks, everyone.